Well, it's great to be with you this afternoon. I'd like to thank Cornell for inviting me. Eric Young, who's a distinguished alum grad, invited me to speak here today, and I appreciate that. But mostly, I appreciate Eric for investing in our company. They were one of the lead investors in our company. How many people here have looked on Google Earth to look for their house? Virtually everybody? And then been disappointed because it was 2 years old? Yeah, pretty much everybody, right? Wouldn't it be cool if you had a real-time Google Earth? You logged on, and you could see what was going on in the environment. Almost in real time. Would not that be cool? Well, the challenge with that is that the imagery that Google uses to populate Google Earth is pretty expensive. A lot of it's satellite-based. Those satellites cost, the last commercial satellite that went up was $850 million. So they're pretty pricey. And to get rapid repeat of imagery from satellites, it takes dozens of satellites. So I'll let you do the math, right? You can see why nobody has launched dozens of satellites to get a real-time Google Earth. Hey, but wouldn't it be cool? But that's what Skybox is about. We have our vision to do kind of a real-time Google Earth. And what I want to talk about a little bit is that famous quote that vision without execution is hallucination. Some ideas are just really hard to pull off, but I tell you what, if you can pull them off, there's great value to be had. So next slide. Oops, I guess I can do that. Next slide. So our vision is to do real-time change detection based on satellite imagery, a real-time Google Earth that is not only searchable by location, but searchable by time. And not only populated with high-definition imagery, what about video? You can see the video, the street. Before that, you could see the plume from the factory. You can actually get a measure of efficiency of power plants by looking at the plume from the factory. So a lot of really cool stuff that you can do from satellites. But to do it, you need to be able to build a satellite for a very small fraction of that $850 million. Like, how about 10? Okay, how about dropping it by well over an order of magnitude? And to be able to get imagery where you can actually, up in the top, you can see that's actually a Skybox satellite image of a ship, container ship in the Panama Canal, so that you can actually count things that matter to the economy. You want to be able to see things that are, you know, at least this big, so it's called sub-meter resolution. Now, we can't see people, so don't worry about what you're doing in your backyard, because we can't see you. But we can count cars in parking lots. We can look at containers on ships and the like. And be able to get that quality of imagery out of a very small package takes really significant innovation. And these are the four founders that put it together. And a lot of you are students out there. Four students at Stanford actually came up with the Skybox business plan as a class project. And when they stop to think about how frustrating it is to look at Google Earth and not be able to have that kind of the level of information, they start to think, what would it take? They start to unpack that. What would it really take? Well, a pretty unique group of folks. The guy on the far on your left, Dan Birkenstock, was working on his PhD. He'd been an analyst at Lawrence Livermore Lab, a data analyst, looking at overhead imagery, understanding how to use that for change detection. The guy on the far on the right, John Fennick, was an Air Force Academy grad. Had a master's degree at MIT, was working on his MBA at Stanford, had worked for the National Reconnaissance Office, so knew all about spy satellites, knew about what the art of the possible was, but also understood sort of the financial challenge. Julian Mann, there next to John, was an undergrad at Stanford and was working in the small satellite office, so understanding what you can do with a satellite about this big, right? And then CY, Ching Yu Hu, she's a Berkeley grad working on a master's degree. She was pretty much the tiger mom that kept them all focused, but did a great job. But they had the vision to, really a powerful and extremely large vision to create a real-time Google Earth requiring not only new satellite technology, but also a data platform that could manage petabytes of information and do change detection, not only as a function of location, but as a function of time that has never been done before. But to do that takes a lot of people. So Skybox grew from those four. We were recently acquired by Google. Didn't mention that, but just a couple of months ago, Google acquired Skybox. I'll talk a little bit about that. But it takes a lot of people to do that. And I think the challenge that our founders had, after a couple years was just the difficulty in actually making this happen, because there's so many technologies that had to come together. And frankly, a lot of what happens in the real world, you just can't learn in school. So there's a tremendous amount of value in bringing in some gray hair or not hair, depending on how you look at it, truly to help it come together. In fact, what you don't see in this group was a group of, in this photo, was a group of 10 very, very experienced executives that we put together, called them our technical advisory group. And they were guys that had been in the satellite imagery industry most of their career, and they understood kind of where a lot of the problems lie. There's just a lot of things they don't teach you in textbooks. There's a lot of very experienced people out there that want to help you succeed, and if you'll ask them, they will tell you all the secrets that they had discovered throughout the years to help you avoid making those same problems. But really a great team that, and you can't overestimate the benefits of having a great team. People have talked about that. We had a team of just exceptional people. And when you build a great team, they become self-selecting, right? It's very easy to see who's not performing, and they actually typically tend to leave because they feel intimidated. And it also, really smart people want to work with really, really smart people. So the power of team, and really had a fabulous team. But a great vision. We had to build satellites. Not only did we build one, we built two. We wanted to make sure that the marketplace understood that we could do this on a reliable basis. We were working with Fortune 500 companies. When we started out, we were thinking, how, you know, low cost, low cost, low cost. And our customers came back and said, well, we want you cost effective. We don't care if it's low cost. We want reliability. We want it affordable, but we want reliable, reliable, reliable. So we changed some of our designs to improve the reliability, and then, but we still had those cost bogeys we had to hold. So a vision to design and build satellites. And the challenge is that you can't go out and buy the pieces for those satellites. And you can't go buy a $100,000 widget here, a $100,000 widget there, and end up with a $10 million satellite. You have to really find innovative ways to do that. I'll talk more about that in a second. So we designed the satellites. We had to build the equipment to do that. That's our clean room in Mountain View, California, where we put together our satellites. We had to design and develop all the support equipment to not only build it, but also to fly it. There's mission control for Skybox. We actually, this is on launch day, so the facility was full of people doing, checking all the subsystems for the satellites. But it's a facility that we have manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have Metamor College students from San Jose State that are flying our satellites and telling it what pictures to capture, what video to capture, making sure that all the systems are running. Once in a while we have high energy protons that'll zap our flight computer and cause a little problem, put the satellite in safe mode, and all that has to be done. But there are people piloting our satellites 24/7. But again, to do it, we had to start from first principles. You can't go out and build a telescope today to take imagery of the quality we needed that's even an order of magnitude within the price range that we could afford. So we had to start from scratch. So we build our own cameras. We have our own camera lab. We have a group of exceptional professionals building cameras. The electronics. We couldn't spend a couple hundred thousand dollars on a flight computer. We could spend we couldn't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a flight computer. We could spend thousands of dollars on a flight computer. So we built our own flight computers. We built our own radios. We had to get 500 megabits per second of information down from the satellites. Those radios were as much as $1 million. We had to start over. So we had a really smart PhD engineer from Stanford who took a DirecTV set-top box, took it apart, deconstructed it, took a couple of the key parts out of it. We now have radios that work for under $1,000 that are extremely reliable, all right? But again, we had to do that in-house because it wasn't available. Not only that, but we had to build a data platform. So each satellite generates about a terabyte of data a day. And if you're going to launch dozens of satellites, that actually begins to add up. You're going to have tens of petabytes of data that you've got to ingest, store, right? And it has to be accessible. You can't just put it in cold storage. In order to do change detection based on location, based on time, you need that on a spinning disk that you can do that kind of analysis. So we had a big group of folks developing a data platform and writing code that allowed us to store that data and do the change detection, which is really important. Because our customers really didn't want pictures. They all wanted reports. You know, they wanted to understand how many cars were in a parking lot, what had changed in my neighbor's factory, what's going on in the environment, how does my crop look compared to what they should look like, and we'll talk more about that. But it was all about the data. So the time came to launch our satellite. The interesting thing about our business, anybody know how you do repairs on a satellite that's in orbit? You don't, all right? So if it doesn't work, it becomes space debris, right? So we launched our first satellite in July of 2014. It went up on a Russian rocket, and it worked. It worked beautifully. So this is an image, an early image that came off our satellite. And to kind of get a sense for resolution, if you look there, you can see the helicopter. You actually see the blades on the helicopter. So how wide are those blades? You know, they're not very wide, so it gives you some idea of the kind of resolution that we're able to pick up. And I've just got some eye candy here because the photos are cool, but that's a shot in China, kind of a resort that we picked in China. The satellite also does infrared because we looked at the market and tried to understand what some of the applications are. One of them is ag, and if you can look at the near IR, it gives you an idea of the level of chloroform that's inside the chlorophyll that's in the plant. And you can map that. We map that IR channel to the red channel on the satellite. So things that pop out bright red have, you know, a lot of green in them, or a lot of agricultural health in them. So you can get a sense for it, but it just pops out when you compare it here to a gold mine. The thing we can do is, again, by looking at imagery, sorting it by day, not just by location, by time, not by location, you can understand change detection. One interesting application is with oil storage. So maybe you know how they store oil, store in these large tanks. How do they manage the pressure in the tank? Anybody know? The roofs float, okay? So a full oil tank, right, if you look at those, the roof's at the top, but if it's kind of empty, there's a pretty big shadow because the roof drops. So you can take overhead imagery from a satellite of an oil storage facility day after day after day and get a very good measure for how much oil is being stored. You know, we had to track commodities. So we did that. So here's a refinery in Saudi Arabia. And you can notice that that image was taken not too long after the satellite was launched. And you can drive down. The images I've shown you are not full resolution, but you can get a sense for that. And you should look at some of those the shadows that you see, especially the one there on your left. You can see there's a shadow that pops up. This is the image that was taken the day after, right? So you can do some analysis on that and quickly see how things are changing within the oil storage industry. And you can do the same kind of analysis for virtually every economic vertical you can think of. We know what's going on in every farmer's field. We would know what's going on in every mine. With Google, we're able to actually do some very cool 3D reconstruction with our video. We can tell you how much earth has been extracted from an open pit mine pretty precisely with some of the analytics that we've got. It's a very, very powerful tool for doing change detection. We also do video, and this is video we took from our first satellite. That's actually Mount Rainier, and this is kind of eye candy, but I'll try to walk through it. But you can see the parallax from the satellite flying at 7 kilometers per second, so it's really whipping across. You can see wave action. A lot of customers want to understand the wave pattern. They don't want to see the waves. They just want a wave current map. We can also track objects. We don't have to just point, but we can track objects. There's the Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur to see what's going on in an environment with video. This is actually a nuclear power plant in North Korea. We can see that there's activity. So long as there's no clouds, we can look at whatever we want to look at. It's pretty interesting capability. Enough resolution, we can see an A330 landing in an airport in China, and we know that it's an A330. Pretty darn cool. We've been able to capture a lot of real interesting video from our satellites that it's almost kind of bends the mind. And the beauty of a lot of this, though, is that when we thought about a real-time Google Earth, and we thought about the power that, or what the applications are, I don't think we initially conceived of even a fraction of what some of those applications would be. Really, we're able to come up with a lot of interesting, like the ocean current maps was something we never dreamed of. Turns out the offshore oil platform industry is massive, and understanding how those ocean currents are handled, are occurring around their platforms and the logistics to support those platforms is a big deal. But I just want to highlight a couple points for entrepreneurs that are kind of thinking about getting into business. One is, Vision is fabulous. You need a great vision, but you also need to tie that with execution. And I think a lot of people underestimate the challenge of execution. The skybox was, I think, unusually challenging because there was so much innovation that was required and cutting-edge technology that had to be developed. But a relentless focus on execution. I think most of the books that you'll read on entrepreneurship, you'll understand that. Google actually tried to do something that we like what Skybox did a number of years back, and they failed. And they were an early customers of ours. They didn't even believe we could do it. And so focusing on execution was really important for creating value within our company. And exceeding expectations. Google gave us an image of the mall in Washington, D.C., and they said, if you can capture an image this good, we'll buy all day long. So we had that image up on the walls at Skybox. We had it in virtually everybody's office. We talked about it. We called it our customer acceptable image. The focus was it needs to be the customer acceptable image. We'd have status meetings weekly. How well are we progressing in our technology to be able to develop and to present that customer acceptable image? And we were able to get imagery that significantly exceeded their expectation, as well as the video. Watching the time here, it was funny that the founder of Google Earth came over early on our development, and we were showing him some of the video that we had. He goes, "Oh, no one cares about video. They just want to see their house on Google Earth. That's all they care about. They just want to see their house." When we showed him the video, the real video from satellites, and were able to tie it into their Singer software analysis products, they're like eyes just open, and it really blew them away. But exceeding customer expectations through, you know, great execution is key. You know, I've talked mostly about execution on the engineering side, but there really are multiple facets to execution. And if we'd done a great job in building our technology but didn't have a solid business plan, we didn't have a solid financing plan, we didn't have a solid marketing plan, we hadn't executed on the other sides of the business, and if we hadn't executed on a great HR program to attract and keep the very best and brightest, we wouldn't have had a business. And so you need to make sure you think about execution on all aspects. And one of the things that I've done a number of startups, and the one that I think the thing that I failed with on my first one was not thinking through the financing strategy. Thought, well, I got seed funding, so whoo, off I go. It's like, oh, now what do? I need Series A or Series B. And we just didn't have that, we didn't have a good plan for getting all the way to the end. And we ended up having to shut that company down because we couldn't fund it. But having having execution, well thought out executable plan in all facets is very, very important. And I will talk about the importance of having a very patient board and patient capital. I've had a number of entrepreneurs ask me, you know, how do you decide which VCs to pick? And how do you know what's the right valuation? And I say, you know what, don't even think about valuation. When you pick a partner, a financial partner, it's like getting married, right? You are wedded to that person, and five or 10 or even 20% difference in valuation almost doesn't matter. If they're a really good partner, if they're people that you trust and that share your vision, and they're the kind of person that you feel like, you know, when things get rough, this person's gonna be there with me because they understand what we're doing, I would take that over better valuation any day. We had our satellites were 12 months late launching. We had raised $90 million and we're just about out. We needed to raise just a little bit more to kind of get us over the edge. We had Google sort of, you know, talking about maybe doing an acquisition. We had other funding options. We had lots going on, but we were just pretty much out of cash. And you know, our board was very patient with us. They were patient enough for us to say no to Google twice. So it wasn't until, you know, the third offer came along we felt like it was good enough to exit. But having a patient board and understanding the value of that, patient board, patient investors, is really key. So that's my deal. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. All right, we've got a lot of questions for you.
Great.
Let's see. So let's start with this one. Why did you join the company, and how did the founders find you?
So, you know, that was one of the challenges that the founders had. I mean, I'm CEO 2.0, right? I'm not a founding CEO. I've been a founder, but I wasn't a founder of Skybox. And, you know, they didn't want a new CEO. They were plenty happy to go try and do this on their own, but the board realized, you know, this is a really, really big challenge, and we don't think the founders are up to it. And so the board kind of insisted that that they go find a new leadership team. And through connections and the like, they tracked me down. I actually said no. I had a couple other things. I just sold the previous company. I was sort of taking my time. I spent 4 months digging into the company before I said yes. And the founders, you know, frankly, it was a rough little while there until they realized that, you know, there are some things maybe they didn't know. Like, they didn't even really have a budget. They didn't understand the value of a budget. And there was just so much that they really hadn't brought to the table. And I think after several months, we were a pretty good team. In fact, all the founders are still there with the company. So I joined Skybox because it looked like it was going to be so much fun after I sort of figured it all out. And back to the comment that was made earlier, time is my most critical commodity right now. You can see I'm, you know, losing it already. And so it was the kind of deal that it was kind of a go big or go home. I mean, a new Skybox with you is going to be transformational to the world, quite honestly, if it does, or it was going to bust, and it was going to do it pretty quick. So that's what attracted me there.
So it was a bold idea, but it wasn't necessarily a new idea. I'm sure a lot of companies had tried and failed before. How did the early founders convince investors that they could do this? And also, were there many times where you guys were ready to kind of throw in the towel and call it a failure?
Eric, you want to take this one? No. You know, I think it was a kind of a confluence of a lot of events, but, you know, Coastal Ventures had raised this Black Swan Fund where they said, you know, we're just going to go invest in crazy things. So they went and did it. And then, you know, it has such a powerful, powerful vision behind it and the ability to transform the way we live that they were able to get the Series B done. They'd made enough progress. But the challenge around Series C was showing people that we really could make this happen, and that was not easy. We made a lot of rounds around the venture community. It took us quite a bit to get that Series C done. But you know what? The bottom line was our investors went to their friends in the industry and said, "Hey, have I got an opportunity for you to do real VC investing? This is what VC is all about, to really kind of change the world." And we were able to get it done.
Great. There's a couple questions about the technology itself. You know, one question about the regulatory landscape and what's the primary applicability of the technology, and another about the future of the industry and whether drones is a disruptive technology, you know, for satellite imagery.
We get that question a lot about, well, let's start with the regulatory. You know, we did have a number of regulatory battles. It's very interesting because this is a capability that the U.S. government does not have. The ability to do rapid refresh of imagery, to do especially video from space. When we published our first video, we did kind of a heat map on who was tracking our website. It was 90% Washington, D.C. area. And subsequently, I've been told that we really had a significant impact on the intelligence community. So there was a lot of people very nervous about what we're doing. But you know what we did? We went to the senior policy officials in the U.S. government. We said, hey, look, here's the straight scoop. We're U.S. citizens. We're patriots. We want to do what's right for the U.S. government. This is an idea whose time has come. So you let us do it, but if you shut us down, the Russians are going to eventually do it, the French, you know, the Chinese, and good luck controlling them. At least if you let us do it, you'll have someone that you can work with to understand what the potential impacts are to national security. So, you know, we're on your side. And that's really what turned the tides there. So that's the question on regulatory. The other one was, what's the other half of that
drones
question?
Drones and is it?
So the drone question, you know, there's a lot you can do with drones, and I think they're very powerful. There are some regulatory hurdles there. The way I look at it is from a data perspective is drones are great from sort of a tactical application. If you need to look at smaller areas or targeted areas, drones are probably the better way to do it. But if you want to map the entire Corn Belt of the world and do it weekly, the satellites are pretty darn powerful. And especially if you want to look at supply chain analysis, which is really an interesting opportunity for us. If you want to understand if you have a gold mine somewhere and if there's something going on in that gold mine, or if you've got roads that are being disrupted, you can tell that by the traffic flow and how quick the cars are moving. If you really want to understand from a strategic perspective how various elements of the economy fit together, satellites are very, very powerful. And I think that there's going to be a place for both of them. But I think that, again, I see satellites more of the strategic application, whereas drones are more tactical.
Another interesting question kind of flowed below the fold here, but when you're in the situation where you're trying to build new technology that's more economical, the $1 million thing down to the $1,000 thing, how do you decide whether or not that should be a product in itself? And did you ever choose to market any of those products you developed?
So we had, very good question. We actually had a lot of incoming requests to buy our satellites, to buy our radios, to buy our flight computers, to buy our software, and on and on and on. And in essence, we were a data company, and by trying to productize that kind of stuff, it'd be a huge distraction for us. We actually built a relationship with an integrated supplier, and said, hey, we will license some of that technology to you, and you can go sell the daylights out of it, give us a royalty, because that helps us by getting more of our hardware out in the marketplace. It makes it robust and will reduce the cost to us. So we did that through licensing. But not directly. It just was way too much of a distraction
that makes sense.
For a small company.
Another interesting question here. So how do you iterate when your product is in orbit?
Well, you can't. And that's one of the challenges about having an $850 million satellite, right? You have to build it, and it has to last forever to recoup your capital costs. The nice thing about a $10 million satellite is that you don't have to worry quite so much about how long they live. So. There's even a company out there, Planet Labs, that has a model where the satellites last a year, right? So they're iterating very, very quickly. So from our perspective, in the space industry, we are iterating very quickly. The plan is to launch 6 to 12 satellites of a particular type on an annual basis, and then every year kind of do a prototype upgrade. So we launched 2 satellites already. We have a third one that's being built that's actually a prototype for an upgrade. So it's got more capable cameras. It's much more agile, so we can look at different things quicker. So there are still ways to iterate. It just depends on the scale, right? Iteration for is a year or two, whereas a lot of areas it's weeks or months.
Right? Sure. And then I think we had a couple more, or maybe one more question. Another question. So and you mentioned a number of the founders are still with the company. What's changed for the team now that they're a part of Google?
careful what I say. big companies, it's great to have an experience working in a big company, because big companies, they have processes, they have procedures. The nice thing about Google is they have lots and lots of money, and Skybox needs lots of money to build satellites. But when you have tens of thousands of employees, it brings bureaucracy. I think they're thrilled to death that they now have the ability and a clear financing path to go launch dozens of satellites, and that's very key. I think there's some frustration because a lot of them were fresh out of school, and understanding that, wow, bureaucracy even exists at Google is some of the frustration, but that's just the way of the world.
That'll be next talk.
That'll be the next talk.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, Tom.
All right, thank you.